find theirs.
Craig's here. Craig, welcome, did you Craig. Donate to the TH Fantasy 2023 rookie guide?
I think he did. We'll have to talk about the list in a second here. So let's.
He was an anonymous donor.
That's fair. I'll take it where we can get it.
Well, why don't you tell everyone what we got?
He was an anonymous donor, but like he still wants people to know it was him. Kind of yeah, like Larry yeah. David.
Yeah, he tweeted about it, but he's like, hey, yeah. I did something big today.
I'm anonymous.
We raised $440 fucking dollars, dude, for the Trevor Project.
Woo! Nice.
In one week.
Yeah, that's fucking dope. All the hard work we did, it's worth it, right?
Hell yeah. 4 months, it's like $100 a month. I'm in.
Hell yeah. Great job, guys. Right,
yeah, so hell yeah.
I'm going to shout these people out. I don't know if they're listeners. I know some people might be because I know one of them is like a Lions fan, so I'm sure he's hyped about us being on the Lions train. So he's actually from Detroit. So Major Look Studios, photographer, my buddy Senor Squats a Lot, a.k.a. Nick. So if you want to get a dump truck ass, he does online coaching for physical education kind of stuff. My friend Becca, my mom, my old boss Mark, Ken, Phil, Brian, Zachy, Waleed, Peaky, Hunter, Jams, all from Football Absurdity. Some guy named Mike on Twitter. I don't know who he is, but thank you for the $20, brother.
Fuck yeah, Mike.
I got two toy buddies from my event in Arizona who were like, what is this thing you do? And I'm like, oh yeah, here's the pitch. I was like, well, do you care about the charity or the game? They're like, mostly the charity. I was like, here's what the Trevor Project is. So my buddy Arturo and D-Violence Rob, my brother, and Tony and I. So,
yeah.
Shout out to everybody.
We've had a few free rides that I've given to people who are like, yo, I get paid next week, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, almost $450. That's pretty sick and worth it. And it was a fun process. I'm glad we all did it. And we'll talk rookie drafts after we do our 81s. Ryan, you got any shorties to start us with?
No, I actually only did one this week.
Whoa.
Changing of the guard.
All right. Yeah. Well, I never get to go first, so I want to go first this time.
Well, yeah, it's just because we had talked about, you know, making the episodes a little bit shorter, but.
And we'll have to, too, eventually when we start doing our team previews and team recaps and all that kind of stuff, which will start, I would assume, probably start in the next month in earnest. Because with three of us, we can breeze through this shit pretty quick.
Sure.
So I'm going to start, and so, you know, there's so many cool players that wore 81. You could do Randy Moss, Terrell Owens, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I decided to instead focus on a team from 1981 that ended up setting a ton of records, but none of them were the types of records you would want to break. So we're going to look at the 1981 Baltimore Colts, widely considered the worst defense in NFL history.
Yes.
Yeah, so the Colts went 2-14 that year and still didn't get the first pick in the draft because the only two teams they beat were the Patriots. They beat them in week 1 and week 16. And both teams ended the year 2-14, so the Colts had the second pick in the draft.
That's just bad luck.
But in between those two wins, the Colts lost, you know, 14 games in a row. So the offense wasn't great, but they were still quarterbacked by MVP Burt Jones, who was a recurring member on our podcast. He was part of the Colts team that made the playoffs that lost to the Steelers before the airplane crash into Baltimore Stadium. He was the quarterback that the guy that flew the plane, like, showed up at his house and was like, yo, you want to talk football and flying? So they were a low-scoring offense, which means that with this defense, the games got ugly real quick. They gave up 30 or more points in 10 of their 16 games.
Oh, my God.
And four of those games, in 1 month period, they had four games where they gave up 40 or more points.
Jesus.
So they gave up a total of 533 points, which...
That's like Gretzky numbers.
This is the Jerry Rice of bad defenses. That total is still the record for most points ever allowed in a season by a single team.
Still?
Yeah. The closest was the
Owen 16 Lions?
Well, close. They were third place, but the 2020 Lions are in second place with 519 points allowed.
Wow.
They have still given up. Now they're number two. They gave up 6,793 yards that season, which was beaten by the 2012 Saints, who somehow gave up over 7,000 yards in 1 year. The Colts only had 100 yards in sacks that year. They gave up 68 touchdowns. They allowed over 300 points in the first half, allowed 306 first downs. They allowed the fourth most rushing yards in a season. And most hilariously, they had a minus 274 point differential.
Jeez.
And I did say that was most hilarious, but I think this might be most hilarious. They had only 12 punt returns that year.
What?
Damn, dude.
That means like there was a game where they didn't even have one.
Several.
That's the Vikings this year.
Yep. Oh yeah, I know that the Vikings are going to be so bad this year.
Cannon.
Yep. So the Colts' first home game of the season had 45,772 fans in attendance. Their last home game of the season had 17,073.
Oh wow.
That's Oakland A's numbers.
Yeah. They were one of two teams in NFL history to lose 11 games in a season where they never held a lead. And so I have one more thing about the 1981 Colts that I want to share with you. In the middle of the year, November, the Colts were 1-9, and they went to Philly to face the 8-2 Eagles. At halftime, the Colts were getting wiped 21-6. Team owner Bob Irsay went up to the press box, put on a headset, and decided to start calling plays.
Hell yeah.
He's like, fuck this, dude. Team insiders told the media that Irsay started calling plays and leaving coach Mike McCormick essentially just standing on the sidelines, not doing anything.
Jeez.
Irsay apparently told the coach to bench starting quarterback Burt Jones and then replace him with Greg Landry and then switch back and forth between the two. He also apparently ran an 11-man blitz on a play.
That's pretty smart, dude.
That's some Madden shit. Like, fuck it. Yeah. Field goal block.
Yeah. Send everyone.
The final score ended up 38-13 Philly, so it didn't make a difference. The coach, Mike McCormick, was quoted years later about the 2 years he coached the Colts, and he said, quote, "Those were the two most unpleasant years of my life, and I really don't care to comment further on it." And the last word on the 1981... the Baltimore Colts in 1981 was from NFL Films. I watched, like, you know, they do season recaps for whatever team.
Yeah.
Most of their 1981 recap video was them looking ahead to 1982. Fucking hilarious.
It was just a vine. See you next season.
So here's the quote from the NFL Films. "If lessons are learned in defeat, this team got a great education." So that's the 1981 Baltimore Colts. That's my 81 of the week.
Nice.
So the real test would be to see how the 1982 Baltimore Colts did.
Wait till next week.
Okay.
We're just going to do the saga of the Colts. Ironically enough, like it always happens, my player was on the Colts during this time.
What?
Really?
Yeah, I chose...
In 1981?
In 1981, I chose Roger Carr. So so the more time you spend with people, you kind of start to pick up their hobbies, interests, and personality components. So the last 3 months I've been on this podcast, I've learned to appreciate tight ends and Derek Carr from Ryan. So my 81 is the creator of Derek Carr, the king of seed, Roger Carr. He's actually not his dad. I did further research today. Because there's actually two white dudes with the name Roger Carr that fit in the timeline of potentially could be Derek Carr's dad. But we're going to reject that reality and just make this into a narrative to fit the content that.
Yeah, that's right.
That was a receiver for the Baltimore Colts.
But you're saying Derek Carr doesn't know who his biological father is.
I mean, all the interviews, man, he could be the wrong guy. You never know.
That's right. That's
true. They do look similar. It's kind of weird, and that's not even like, oh, he's just white guy number four, like I say my best friend and I are. So at this time, like most athletes that we covered, Roger Carr was a two-sport athlete. He did track and field and played football. Initially, Carr played guard and punter, but for some reason, when he went to Louisiana Tech, they're like, line him up out wide.
Of course. Okay.
Yeah. So during this time, he was a little homesick, but he got over that, and he won two division titles with Louisiana Tech and helping them win one of the championship games by scoring a touchdown in the last 12 seconds to give his team the lead.
Nice.
So in 74, he was selected 24th overall to the Baltimore Colts, making him the second receiver taken off the board after Lynn Swann. So I've learned also, too, that the Colts franchise is just cursed with bad quarterback and rebuild consistently. So during this time, Johnny Unitas was playing in San Diego. Carr had Burt Jones and San Diego reject Marty Dorms. I don't know how to pronounce the last name. I don't think it really matters. I don't think his name was actually highlighted in Wikipedia.
Sure. So, not a blue name. It was a red name. No,
yeah. He don't exist. So his first year, he really didn't do much. He caught 29 passes, 405 yards, and he didn't catch his first touchdown until 1975. So he's got the Jacoby Myers curse.
Sure.
In 76, Carr had his best statistical season, racking up 1,112 yards on 43 passes for 11 touchdowns. So he averaged like 25 yards a catch.
Damn.
At the end of the year.
Wow.
Yeah. So he'd be named to All-Pro second team and selected to the Pro Bowl, which would be the first and last of his career. And he would also be the receiving leader for the NFL that year, too.
Damn, you know, when I look at Derek Carr, I'm like, I bet he came from the loins of a former NFL leading receiver.
who was so painfully mid with one good statistical anomaly. So in 75 and 77, the Colts would win the AFC East title, and Carr would never top 1,000 yards, but would come close in 80 with 926 yards. In 1982, Carr was suspended for comments and actions against head coach Frank Kush.
Oh, save that for next week, baby.
So
no, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what happened, because getting suspended back then, like we've talked about, probably was really difficult. So he probably ended up whooping his ass. Kush was known to be a military type general who would physically assault players and had allegations of gambling on games when he was in college. Mm-hmm. So during that time period in Arizona, the games would be so late, they actually wouldn't be like reported to like the newspapers. So there's a lot of rumor circulating that a lot of those games were rigged.
Oh yeah, that's true. Because so, like, the East Coast newspapers just probably wouldn't have the stats because the games wouldn't finish till like 1 or 2 in the morning. The presses were already done.
Yep. So
that's crazy.
A lot of rumors on that, man. Different era. We should go back to that sometimes.
Right.
So at the end of the time on the Colts, he was in a rebuild, obviously, like Tony was saying, and his Burt was gone. His secondary quarterback went to the USFL, and defensive end starter Matt Barnes vacated the team. Initially, he wasn't allowed to leave the team because he had 1 year left on the contract, and management said, tough shit, you're under a contract. But ultimately, he was traded to the Seahawks, as he was supported by the team and supported by his friend Ken Huff and longtime teammate, so he wouldn't be stuck on this shit-ass team. And when he was traded, the strike happened, so again, he kind of caught a string of bad luck. Then he was sent to the shadow realm of the San Diego Chargers, where he would ultimately retire.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, I know. For real, dude. It's the graveyard. In 2009, he became the offensive coordinator at the Providence High School in Charlotte, North Carolina, where he still has that clipboard.
Hey, look, my co-teacher is a coach, and he is a great teacher. He's awesome. He's great with the kids. Kids fucking love him. But he's a coach.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like. Your skill set, it grows in a different way depending on that kind of stuff. So I wonder if this dude's like a PE coach. And by the way, I got to give a shout out to every football coach, every high school sports coach, especially football, that's not a fucking gym teacher. That's a content area teacher.
Oh, yeah. There was, yeah. I think, all of our teachers that taught gym sports all taught PE except for one guy who taught anatomy. And it was like, here's a packet. I got to watch tape all day.
Yep.
So last thing on Carr. So he would actually go away with Burt Jones on his airplane.
Hey!
To his hometown to train that the Colts were completely unaware of. So they were just on this mystery mission in an airplane together, just driving around. And that's Derek Carr's potentially illegitimate father. Roger Carr.
Maybe you never know. He could have been the CIA.
Oh my God! Yeah, Derek Carr is like an MK Ultra baby.
Yeah, and you ever seen that movie about Roger Barris and how people thought he was, you know, the famous game show host, but also a CIA agent?
No, I did not see that.
Oh man, it's such a good movie. It's got, can't even remember his name. We'll talk about it. Maybe we'll do a movie review next week.
Oh no. All right, Ryan, who's your 81?
So this week, guys, I'm real sorry. Okay, I know we were really excited to get into the 80s and talk about offensive players, but this guy's got such a classic football name that I felt like, even though he's on the defense, I should still do a profile.
Oh, hell yeah.
Let's go.
So let's talk about Dick Night Train Lane.
That's the guy.
Love that name.
Number 81 cornerback. Played with a bunch of teams, including the Chicago Cardinals, Tony.
Yep. Oh, yeah. That's in case people that aren't from Chicagoland don't know, like, the Monsters of the Midway refers to the Chicago Cardinals. Because the Cardinals played on the south side, and the Midway Airport is the airport on the south side of Chicago.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good old Cicero.
Yep.
So yeah, he played for 14 years, originally drafted by the Rams, only played like a year, then went to like 6 years with the Cardinals, and ended his career playing for the Lions.
Yep.
Interesting stat about this guy. As a rookie, he had 14 interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Wow. Guess what? That's still a record 70 years later.
Yep. Yep.
Damn.
Yep. Yeah, because each team only ran one receiver on a passing play back then.
He was known as one of the most ferocious tacklers in NFL history. He's in the Hall of Fame as of 74.
Oh, early. Yeah.
Yeah, so he made a big impact and was he stopped playing in 65. So within 9 years, he was in the Hall of Fame.
Damn.
Fuck yeah.
After retiring from football, he did some work with the Lions, various universities. Oh, from 75 to 1992, he was in charge of Detroit's Police Athletic League. Born in Austin, Texas, 1928. When he was 3 months old, he was abandoned by his birth parents, a prostitute and a pimp. Aww. He was found covered in newspapers in a dumpster. He later recalled that my father was called Texas Slim. I never saw him. I don't know if he's the one that told my mother to throw me away. A pimp told my mother I had to go. They put me in a trash can and took off. Some people heard me crying. They thought it was a cat. That's all I got to say about that.
I love all the like the casual nature where it's like, yeah, you know, I don't know who it was that dumped me in the garbage can. Like, okay.
Luckily, he wasn't raised in the system. He was adopted and raised by someone named Ella Lane, who also had four other children in Austin, Texas. Obviously, growing up poor, did odd jobs around the town, pool halls, laundry businesses, stuff like that. After here's an interesting fact, Tony. After he graduated high school, he joined the Negro League baseball team, the Omaha Rockets.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. Two-sport athlete.
Yeah, some scout found him, and then he started his career in baseball.
Some scout found him in a dumpster.
Yep. He then went to try to do some more academic things at a local college in Nebraska. But then eventually, in 48, so he was 20 years old, he enlisted in the U.S. Army and served 4 years. So post-war, so he wasn't seeing any action. Well, I don't know. It doesn't say like he was in Korea or anything.
Sure.
That was 1950.
Sure.
But after that... let's see. While working at an aircraft plant in L.A., he passed the L.A. Rams offices on his bus ride to work. He then proceeded to walk into the office with a scrapbook of clippings in 1952 and demanded a tryout. He was then signed as a free agent. He initially tried out as a receiver, but was switched to the defensive back by the Rams and what ultimately he ended up playing.
This is why, dude. This is fucking why all of our parents, when we were 16 and looking for jobs, they were like, you go out there and you hand your resume to people,
right,
or you see if they have an application, and every single place is like, it's online. It's online. Apply online. And your parents are like, do you go out there? It's the value is in going out there and meeting people and shaking hands. No, man, I'm 16. I'm high right now. Like, let me apply online to work at McDonald's. Fuck you, right. Dick Night Train Lane.
So here's how we tie it into last week's episode. So he acquired his nickname Night Train during his first training camp with the Rams. Teammate Tom Fears, ding, ding, ding.
There we go.
Had a record player in his room and frequently played the record Night Train by Jimmy Forrest. Record was released in 1952 and was the number one R&B hit for 7 weeks. According to an account published by the LA Times in 52, whenever Fears plays it, Lane can be found in the hall outside Tom's room dancing to the music.
My guy.
So that's how he got Night Train.
I thought you were going to say, you know, because it tied into the last episode, I thought you were going to say he owned like a Night Train Night Train barbecue or something like that.
No, that would have been cool, I guess, but
I almost want a restaurant again.
He was initially uncomfortable with the racial implication of the nickname, which had been bestowed on him by his white teammates, but he eventually embraced it after a newspaper reported on his performance against Washington Redskins star, who's got an even better name, Choo Choo Justice, with the headline Night Train Derails Choo Choo.
Oh, that's strong,
right?
That's strong. They were so excited that week.
Right? Oh my God. The writers were like, what? Did you say that again?
Wait, give that man a raise.
And yeah, he went on to have a really good playing career. Like I said, 14 seasons. We don't have to get into all the specifics. Let's see. He actually got traded to the Chicago Cardinals in a 3-team deal, which was kind of uncommon for the time because, you know, I feel like that stuff didn't start happening until like we were kids.
And because there were like 12 teams in the league.
Yeah, that's true. In 2009, here's an interesting fact, a film produced by NFL ranked Lane number 2 on the list behind Dick Butkus as the most feared tacklers in league history.
Oh, yeah. He rocked dudes.
Yeah.
I trained? Yeah.
So, all in all, he 14 years in the NFL. He had 68 interceptions. Pretty dope. 1,207 interception return yards and 5 touchdowns on interceptions.
Damn.
11 fumble recoveries, returning them for 57 yards and a touchdown.
You ever watch, like, old football? 1950s pick sixes just fucking hit different, man. Yeah.
Right. When he retired, he was ranked 2nd in the NFL with his 68 career interceptions, and still ranks 4th in NFL history as of the end of the 2018 season.
Wow.
Yeah, he's done so many things for the sport. He's in the Texas Sports Hall of Fame, the NFL Hall of Fame, the 75th anniversary NFL all-time team.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He's even in the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame. The 1950s all-decade team. Yeah, that's Dick Night Train Lane.
Love me some Night Train. Yeah, that guy fucking ruled.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's take a break. We'll come back. We got some shit to talk, and then we'll do that. So we'll see you soon. And goodbye.
we're back.
I almost did it. I almost harmonized with you there.
It's going to happen one of these days.
We're back.
So we've been talking. Rookie draft season is upon us. And now I think is actually a great time to look back at last year's rookie draft. And I want to kind of talk, I want to talk rankings with you guys. So we have some rankings and we're doing like a rank them. So I made some fours for each of my wonderful co-hosts. And I'm hoping we could go back and forth and have us rank some guys. So y'all in? Ready for it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to start with Shane. I want you to rank these wide receivers for for dynasty purposes. Drake London, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, and Jackson Smith and Jigba.
All right. So all you stat nerds, I want you to whip your genitals out with us. You're just going to start beating it with this statistical jerk-off session.
Here we go.
So do you want me to just list them in order and my reason why, or you want me to go each guy and then why?
Go with what feels right, baby.
All right, so this is kind of contrary to popular opinion. I have Chris Olave as ranked number one.
Ooh, boy.
So when I first started this exercise, I had Wilson, London, Olave, JSN. But the more I dived into the stats, I started to fall in love with Chris Olave more and more. And there's a really strong argument that if he didn't miss two games last year, he would have been a locked and loaded offensive rookie of the year. So his efficiency was much greater than Wilson's, with 1,042 yards and 26% target share and 591 snaps with 119 targets and 72 catches. His average depth of target was significantly higher than the other two, as well as his yards per route run by 4 yards. Olave had 44% of the air yard share for his team with an upgrade at QB, because I think Andy Dalton really hit like the apex of his career in that shit team.
Sure.
And there's not really any competition because I personally believe Michael Thomas is dust and really who cares about A.T. Perry. I think even though in the short term, Wilson might have a stronger case with Aaron Rodgers being there, I think that window is a lot smaller. And Chris Olave, if you look at the actual like statistical uses of him, he has a higher output of efficiency as well as like air yards compared to okay. other guys.
Sure.
All right. So Garrett, go ahead.
No, go on.
All right, so Garrett Wilson. So while their statistics are relatively similar, according to the Edge 33, which is what I use for everything,
yep.
the routes and targets ran from Garrett Wilson feel like an anomaly due to Breece Hall being hurt and Elijah Moore being benched during that year. So I feel like it was kind of a force feed the one guy who's good on our team to maintain relevance to try to attempt to make the playoffs in that run. So in 2022, he had 148 targets for 83 catches with a 25% target share on 1,575 air yards. With Breece recovering, I think those numbers kind of retain temporarily, or at least for half the season. And while I'm Elijah Moore truther and saw him as his only competition, we really don't know what Rodgers is going to do since he brought his weird ragtag bunch of fanboys over there.
Sure did.
Because he put a black magic hex on that franchise to bend to his will.
Yep.
So I still think even though Wilson has the ability to repeat because he did with a ham sandwich, I don't know what his outlook is this year because of basically his efficiency in comparison to volume. It doesn't really line up to mentally how the way I see it, along with Aaron Rodgers willing to spread the ball and Breece Hall eventually coming back this year. Probably like week 9 is when he kind of retains form is my philosophy. So the next person I have ranked is JSN. So these Ooh. Two are probably, yeah, these two are probably hardest, and it's most likely due to a coin flip based on situation. Ultimately, JSN and London are both in run first offenses with mid to above mid QBs at the best for the foreseeable future. So even though JSN will most likely have a slower start at any of these three in their career, I still think he'll be able to establish himself as a PPR machine along with like the Keenan Allen or Amon-Ra St. Brown's. He's not a home run hitter, but he's gonna rack up those yards.
Yep.
And even though he's gonna be the third option in week one, I think that's gonna change over time with coverage leaning more towards DK and Tyler Lockett to start, as well as Tyler Lockett kind of being phased out of the offense due to the high draft capital. And JSN will be able to exploit his slot role and find the holes in the defense, as he had an 81% success rate against zone coverage in college, and that's kind of where he's gonna find himself in defensive schemes. And he also had the second best coverage against man right behind his running mate, Chris Olave. And I think JSN's going to be more of an example of being patient in Dynasty than expecting an immediate return on his value. And he's not the alpha, but I think he's going to produce at like a top 15 level over the course of his career.
Won't get any disagreement from me, man. Like, people complain about, like, oh, he got drafted into a bad situation. Do you consider, like, T. Higgins a bad situation? Is Jordan Addison a bad situation? Like, sure, you will get less targets, but if the other guys out there are demanding more coverage than you, the quality of your target goes up.
Yeah, and in a PPR format, dude, I'll take 9 catches for 90 yards, right? Like,
yep.
I'll take my 20-point game any way I can slice it.
Yep.
All right, so the last one is Drake London. So the more I dug into Drake London, I kind of started to back away from him. I only have one share of London just from a previous trade, so it's not a bad guy to have, you know what I mean? This isn't an indictment on him or me saying you should sell or get out, but some people say that Kyle Pitts is his only competition, who had a 30% target share. But I really think his biggest competition is Bijan Robinson, because Arthur Smith had his wet dream before the entire United States viewing audience when they drafted him at 8. And that offense is going to run through Bijan, and we're going to bear witness to it. So London's stats aren't really bad. So this is, like I said, it's not an indictment, but he had 801 snaps with 116 targets, 72 catches, which is identical to, Chris Olave, with 2.17 yards per route run and 12 yards per reception, which is great. However, the air yards is kind of why I'm scared from him, because he had 300 less than the others in that grouping of these. And I don't really know if that was like Mariota absolutely shitting the bed or a scheme fit. But I also don't see those numbers really changing, because they drafted a quote unquote generational running back, and they're just going to abuse that RPO system.
Yep.
And it could change in 2 years, because management might realize drafting in the top 10 every year kind of sucks ass. So I think London's kind of a victim of circumstance for right now. So that's kind of why he's at the fourth. I mean, there's still guys who I think can all be within top 15 finishes and top 15 wide receiver rankings, potentially top 5, top 10. But as of right now, that's how I would put them in my pecking order.
Okay. So we've got Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Drake London is your ranking. Yes. So let's go over to Ryan. Ryan, let's talk some running backs here. All right.
And do running back?
I want to do running backs. We're saving the tight ends for last.
Let's go. Okay.
So we're going to go the ghost of Tyler Algier, Brian Robinson, Zach Charbonnet, and Devin Achane.
With this one, it's kind of tough. Obviously, Algier took that hit with Bijan, you know, getting drafted by Atlanta. And like Shane was saying, you know, he's gonna be the offense. unless he gets hurt, Algier could see some time. But let's hope that Bijan doesn't fall with the rookie curse and get injured in training camp or something like that.
Sure.
So with that said, I'm putting Algier at the bottom of the list at 4. The next one up's gonna be Charbonnet. I mean, look, Seattle had to take multiple running backs in this draft. You got to remember, yeah, they have Walker, but at the time they only had 2 running backs on their roster going into this draft. So, you know, it was right for them to grab a couple in the draft. It sucks that Walker is there, because he's going to get some handles. They're going to try him out and stuff. But ultimately, he's not going to be that bell cow unless Walker gets hurt. And we all know that Seattle loves to run, especially with Geno Smith as quarterback.
So this sets up a really interesting last two, because you have Algier at 4, Charbonnet at 3. So tell me, Ryan, who's your number 2?
My number 2 is Achane, because I like the play calling in Miami, and he's kind of a specialty player, and I think the coach is going to get him. The coach was Flores, right? Or no, not Flores.
No, McDaniel.
McDaniel, right. And he's got a good mind for these scheme players, and I think he's going to get a chance to emerge as somewhat of a weapon later on this season. And who knows what's going to happen with Tua, so they're going to have to potentially rely on the run game a lot. But my number one, Brian Robinson, man, he looked so good last year with the Redskins. Sorry, the football team.
Many men. Many, 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 many men.
I think he's in line to have another great season, especially with what's going on. They have somewhat of a decent quarterback. He's not great, but, you know, it's promise. I do like, you know, McLaurin and Dotson. Dotson I'm really heavy on this year, but I think a lot of that offense is going to run through Brian Robinson this year. So he's my number one.
Okay. Hey, you know, B-Rob is, if he totes the rock, like, there was talk that... I
mean, he got shot and then had that crazy beard. I mean, like, come on.
I think if his touchdown efficiency goes up, he's going to fly up ADP.
Yeah.
Same with Charbonnet. If Charbonnet, like, becomes the goal line back we think he is, like, we're going to look back in a year and be like, oh, yeah, he should have been number one just because of that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
The utilization of him and the way those numbers skewed.
You think that's like possible, or they could do like a Detroit situation from last year and like Charbonnet grabs all the goal line touches?
Well,
I think so.
The issue is if we can't comp it directly to what Detroit did, because Seattle also picked up Kenny McIntosh.
Yeah.
So they picked up a pass catcher. So like, I don't think either of them is guaranteed pass work at all.
It's just going to be who show up in camp more, honestly. Right. Like, even though the draft capital does matter, I think it's going to be who wants it more. And I think, ultimately, to me at least, Charbonnet has more dog in him than McIntosh.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think it's going to look probably more like Philly looked last year, where everyone just gets a chance for run.
Yeah.
Sure.
Seattle's trying to win a title. You know what I mean? I know we thought they were tanking, but like this signifies they're trying to pad their depth because they realized... oh, we can't rely on Geno, so we might as well just load up where we can on these dudes who can exploit the offense.
Right. And they got Jackson and Jigba too. I mean, they're trying to do something.
If you're a team in the NFC with an okay chance, you might as well push, because the NFC right now is two teams and then a bunch of question marks.
Yeah, because look at the West. It's what, San Francisco and Philly, right?
Right.
Who you would say is competitors.
Yep.
Or like locked in as competitors.
Yep.
Yeah.
And who knows how that goes? Like, San Francisco doesn't exactly have a functioning quarterback right now. So like, now's the time you push, you hope for a home game in the playoffs and you see what happens from there. So, all right, Shane, let's go back. We've got running backs for you here. I have three guys that were drafted last year and I want to know where you place the fourth.
All right.
So our four here: Roschon Johnson, Damian Pierce, Lord and Savior James Cook, and Rashad White.
Unfortunately, dude, I have to go ahead.
Dalvin Cook should go to the Buffalo Bills and play with his brother. Sorry.
I think he's going to Miami, dude.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. That would totally ruin my A-chain thing.
I know. I was going to say RIP A-chain drafters. All right. So this exercise is a lot easier to me after I dove into the stats than the wide receivers. So I have Damian Pierce as my number one, even though he's not a receiving back. I know PPR, you kind of lean towards the guys who can do it all. So even though his snaps are less than Rashad White, he did rush the ball over 100 times more than Rashad White. His yards per carry wasn't as high as Cook, who had a 5.7, where Pierce had a 4.3. His yards before contact and after yards dwarf White and Cook. So while Cook can be seen as the most efficient in yards per attempt, it was relatively similar given carry attempts. So Cook had a higher missed tackle percentage of 8% compared to 4% of Pierce and a 2% of White. However, Pierce shines with broken tackles with 33, where Cook and White combined for 13.
So
the man runs fucking angry, and that's what we want to see in our running backs, right? Like, same with Brian Robinson, runs angry. Just a plotter. He's gonna get you chunk plays. So I could be talked into Rashad White higher based on his target share and pass attempts due to the volume. But however, all three are kind of relatively similar with around a 20% average target share as a receiver, as a running back per route run. So the one anomaly within this data set was James Cook, who is used more so as a slot receiver at times compared to just a screen user. I think his ADOT was like 10 for like
the
seven or eight slot routes they ran with him. So as of right now, the situations and as they are follows is here, I would rank them. So Pierce is the clear bell cow in offense that didn't really do anything to bolster their wide receiver room outside of John Mechie getting medically cleared to play. Right. I really feel a slow transition for Stroud is going to have to occur where they're going to have to lean on Pierce to lead the offense, just for the scheme and at least for a majority of the season. Like his draft capital could get, or his relevance could get nuked in a year, right? Whenever something happens, they yeah. draft another guy or whatever. But as of right now, I think based on the way that offensive scheme and the reliance on a rookie quarterback having to develop, I think Pierce is going to be, he's going to repeat, if not do better than last year. The next
I'm hedging on that this year in a couple of the best ball like season long tournaments that I've done from my leftover winnings from Underdog last year. Cause I'm not going to deposit more cause Underdog is the devil. I've been getting a lot of Devin Singletary exposure because that's going to be a high volume rush offense.
Yeah. And Singletary's not a bad running back, right? Like it just takes, nope. like Ryan said, it takes one injury and 2 weeks off for that guy to become relevant and win you weeks.
Right.
Or you return yep. a value of, cause where are you getting him? Like 12th round?
Lower than that, man. We're talking 15, right. round 15, round 14. Oh,
so he's a free lottery ticket then. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't hate that at all. All right. So yep. the next guy is Rashad White. So yeah, they brought in our guy, Sean Tucker, who will probably eat into the receiving shares at his, that's his number one skill set. He's more of a slot receiver than a running back in our opinion. And it's probably going to take a little bit for him to be implemented in the offense because he's a UDFA, so he's probably seen as disposable to this team unless he shows up.
Yep.
That line was pretty ravaged by injury last year and will be getting better going forward. But unfortunately, their QB situation got significantly worse. So that might be wheels up for, like, I know you were a big Rashad White buyer because I don't know if you can trust Kyle Trask or Baker Mayfield to run that offense efficiently.
In no.
A passing scheme. So I think they're going to really have to rely on, I don't know if it's going to be right up the middle or if they're going to run like a zone scheme like Miami, shift over to kind of spread out the ball. And I also don't think they're going to have a lot of touchdowns because that team is just going to be atrocious. So yeah. for fantasy, I don't think, I know we don't want to count on touchdowns for points. I think the minimal ability for scoring is really going to drive down that where I want to see him in that ranking.
Okay.
So my next guy is for the Bears boys, Roshan Johnson.
Ooh.
So he's kind of stuck in the middle area for me where I believe Fields is the RB1 and they brought in DJ Moore. So I don't know how much of a significant contributor he's going to be right out the gate, as well as Donta Foreman being there. I do feel like he'll be kind of like a Jamal Williams type character arc where they just blast him through the hole to protect the quarterback. So they get to the 2, they get to the 5 and they're like, hey, just run up the gut. Go yep. dog. I do see him for passing Donta Foreman because even though I'm a Donta Foreman truther, I think his time is very limited in the NFL just because he's kind of mid. And like we've talked about in the past, I don't know how this management sees Herbert, even though he's contributed, right? He does get hurt kind of frequently, so we can't really count on him to be consistently there as the bell cow, even though Roshan is kind of the number one reason why I want to get him in drafts is because he has the bell cow frame.
Yep.
And he also can catch passes. I'm not sure what the Bears scheme looks like with checkdowns, especially since
Fields is less of a checkdown guy, but they run a good amount of screens.
Okay. That makes sense then. And then the last guy is James Cook. So just like Chicago, but with a quarterback, Josh Allen's a running back one on that team. And they brought in a better running back than Devin Singletary with Damian Harris. So I really don't expect Cook's stats to change that much just based on his snap share and the amount of times they run him. It might go down a little bit because they did draft Kincaid to be their second wide receiver.
Yep.
And I did meme James Cook into existence, but yeah. I think he's kind of a flex play at best in fantasy. And I really don't see him scoring more than 10 points on average for you in fantasy. Like I don't really see a viable future for him going forward. Like sure, he's on a high powered offense, but I don't think he's where that offense runs through.
Yeah, I agree. He's not going to get time unless there's an injury or something. It's not going to be a big part of that game script.
I'll tell you this now too. Damian Harris is a guy I'm grabbing in best ball drafts.
Another guy who can punch it up the middle. You know what I mean? He's not the biggest guy, but yeah. he's definitely a better up the gut runner. And that's where Buffalo seems to find themselves within 5 yards every time. And they can't get it done.
And remember those years where everyone's trying to find the running back on a high volume passing team that scores a lot of points. Like, all of a sudden people think they've figured out Buffalo's running back rotation. There's it that doesn't work.
It's like Jalen Hurts. That's why everyone's like, right. Oh, Swift's going to be RB1. I'm like, no, Philly was a death sentence from everyone running back. We didn't want running backs there.
And Shane, I know, like you've said, admittedly, that, like, you know, since you're newer to the game, like Ryan and I can attest to the fact that from like 2008 to like 2017, everyone wanted to find the one Patriots running back that was finally going to get all the touches.
Never figured out.
It never happened.
That was like my first introduction into fantasy. Don't draft running backs on Buffalo, or not Buffalo, in New England, because you're going to get stuck with the wrong guy. It doesn't matter what you do. It's just that's the way it plans out.
Yes.
That's why I feel like
Belichick's such a good coach that he wants to keep teams guessing, and he's going to scheme the running back that week that he thinks the team watched the least film on, you know?
Yeah. I totally get it. And I think Buffalo should be one of those offenses. I mean, we all thought it was Singletary, and then Zach Moss was the guy. LOL. And now it's James Cook, right? And like, we watched Zach Moss play decently last year in spell of Jonathan Taylor when Taylor was hurt. So like, either they just haven't found the running back that fits exactly what they want to do, or they're perfectly content to just churn these low end guys over and over again and use them. Hey, you'll be the guy that gets the ball this week. Hey, you'll be the guy that gets the ball this week. Like, that's just kind of how they do it.
Yeah. Right.
So, okay. So yours is Pierce, White, Roshan, and Cook.
Correct.
And I am going to go on right now on record and say that I think Roshan Johnson leads the Chicago Bears in carries this year.
I think that's a very, very fair assumption.
I mean, Shane brought it up, Ryan, that like, we don't really know exactly how much Poles and the new management like Herbert. Herbert was not their guy.
Yeah, true.
And they've drafted a running back 2 years in a row.
Yeah, but Herbert's also a gimmick player. I mean, he's better. He's a better, way better third down back than he could ever be a, you know. Look at what happened when Montgomery went out a few games and they tried making him the featured running back. It just really didn't.
It didn't work. It didn't work. And so I think it's Roshan's backfield. I think there's a good chance Roshan is actually, I'm going to say this, I think there's a chance he's the week one starter. I mean, why not, right? Going against Green Bay? Fuck it.
Who has the better chance to be the week one starter? Roshan or Kendra Miller in New Orleans?
Roshan. I don't think New Orleans was going to pay Jamal Williams give him a 3-year deal to not have him be the lead. I think there's a chance Kendra Miller gets 12 touches a game, but I don't think he starts.
I just said that because I'm staring at him on my queue, my fantasy draft right now.
Okay. Well, let's do a tight end Ryan rank to wrap this segment.
Bring us home. So,
Ryan, I purposely avoided all the top tier guys and we went straight mid. So yeah.
I like it. I like these choices. So it made it kind of tough.
So let's introduce
Ryan's mid-tier, kind of shitty dynasty tight end ranks.
All right, we'll start with number 4.
Well, let's do the list. The list is Sam Laporta, Chig Okonkwo, Isaiah Likely, and Luke Musgrave.
All right. So we'll start at the bottom. Let's go with Luke Musgrave.
Oh, gonna
be number 4, all right? Not just because he's a Green Bay Packer enemy, but because Green Bay drafted a lot of talent, and not only did they also drafted Tucker Kraft. They drafted 2 tight ends in the draft, and I mean, I can't expect Green Bay to do that well with Jordan Love, all right? He's been sitting on the sidelines with Rodgers, and for me personally, I feel like of all the quarterbacks in the league to learn stuff from, Rodgers is probably not the best one just because he's an arrogant asshole. So I don't feel like Rodgers taught him a lot or made an effort to teach him a lot. But anyways, yeah, so Luke Musgrave, number 4. just because number one, he's a rookie. We got no NFL tape on him, and it's just going to be a real crapshoot offense, I think, in Green Bay this year. I'm predicting them to finish at the bottom of the NFC North.
Okay.
Next one up, number three, going to be Sam Laporta.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right. You know, I am high on him this year in Detroit's offense, but there's so many people on Detroit's offense that the ball's just going to be spread around so much that, you know, we'll see some flashes of Laporta. He could get, you know, 2-3 touchdowns on some gimmick plays, you know, in between the 5 and 10 yard line, the goal line. But I think we're going to need another year or two to see. Not to mention if Goff gets injured. I mean, they've got a rookie Hendon Hooker, which could play to his advantage, but I'm not thinking it's going to. But what are you going to say?
That Detroit offense just does not use the tight end to the level that you would want.
Right, right. Next one up be Chig Okonkwo. All right.
Oh, okay.
The wide right. Special.
Yeah. I really like him. It just sucks that he plays for Tennessee. All right.
I think it might be a good thing, though. I think it might be a good thing for him that there's no other people.
He showed some. I mean, they got Treylon Burks, but that whole offense, as long as Derrick Henry is going to be there, they're gonna run it, you know, 40 times a game, and he's gonna have those great plays. Like, he's an interesting deep threat, like, on that offense. But if Tannehill goes out, he's gonna be non-existent. You know, who's the backup in Tennessee?
Will Levis.
yeah, it's going to be non-existent.
107 in one of my rookie drafts today.
I took him 108 in the Football Absurdity rookie draft.
Look, the guy looked great last year, but without Tannehill, and as long as Derrick Henry's there, he's not going to get as many opportunities to show off his athleticism as he could on other teams. But, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. One injury to Derrick Henry, and they got to throw every game now because they're playing from behind.
So that means your number one out of this four is
Mr. Isaiah Likely. Now, I was high on Isaiah Likely last year, and, you know, of all the people in this group, this guy has a year under his belt studying under a NFL great tight end Mark Andrews. And now that Lamar Jackson is back with the Ravens, remember how injury prone Andrews was last year? Yep. Like, look what happened when Andrews was out for those few games towards the end of the year. Isaiah Likely was catching touchdowns.
Yep.
Yeah, he fucked up his trade value because I was trying to buy him before that happened and missed that window.
And that's, I think, one of the greatest offenses this year, probably for the tight end, is to play for the Ravens now that Jackson is back. Because all it takes, like I said, is Andrews to get battled or, you know, a little bit battled up and bruised up. And it's Isaiah Likely's, you know, position to be the starter. And
can I tell you a funny story? Last year in Dynasty, the week that Jamar Chase got hurt, I traded, as soon as that news broke, I traded Tyler Boyd for Isaiah Likely, straight up, one for one.
Damn.
In a Dynasty league.
I like it.
It's worth every penny.
Because guess what? Even if Mark Andrews, you know, he's going to want a bunch of money soon, so what happens if they trade him?
Yeah, we've seen Baltimore be cheap.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And Isaiah Likely will be in his second year and still have two more years on his rookie contract, making him the number one tight end in the league, potentially.
Oh, right around the time Kelsey retires?
Probably. Most likely. I mean, no one's ever gonna go over Kelsey unless he gets hurt, but
yeah. So those are our ranks. We've got some combined this year, last year, Dynasty ranks. Now let's talk the startup league that we did, or that we're doing, because we're just trying to figure out who's ready to trade back.
I'm ready to trade back. You ready to trade back?
I'm willing to tier offers for this pick. So Ryan, I know Ryan's not as terminally online as Shane or I, and so you haven't watched the discussion board for the startup draft. Every single pick, the person who's picking is like willing to hear offers for this pick right now,
right.
and they wait 4 fucking hours to make their pick. Like our last pick, I was like, hey, just letting you know, we're not interested in trading these picks. We haven't picked in like 6 rounds. So
I get it. If it's like the first 3 rounds, I get it, you know, but now that we're past like the 4th or 5th round, like
you have an hour. That's my justification. Either you chase what you want or you have an hour. Outside of that, keep it moving.
Yeah. A lot of like, we're going to use all 8 hours of the clock. I think today we've had like 5 or 6 picks.
Which is wild, because like after we hit round 2, I blinked and we're in round 6, and I'm like, oh shit, we're up right now. I had no idea.
So let's talk about our build for a little bit here. We got the 101, so we just took Mahomes. In a league where passing touchdowns are worth 6 points, there's no point in risking it with a Josh Allen.
Right. Even if it was 4 points, I'd still take Mahomes.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I had Josh Allen ranked above him for like 3 months last year, and I was like, that's stupid. It's still Mahomes. It doesn't matter who he has. That offense is going to be so dominating that he's just going to put up numbers. Sure, he gets hurt in real playoffs, but all you need him for is fantasy playoffs, so who gives a shit?
Who gives a shit? Patrick Mahomes, who gives a shit? There was a free fall on the board. Bijan went, and so we found ourselves at 111, and Justin Fields was still on the board, so we moved up. And now we in a super flex league with Mahomes and Justin Fields is nuts.
And I want to credit Hunter to that, because he really changed my brain in startups of just like, you know what, dude, rounds 2 and 3, it's important, but you kind of hit a gross tier there where you're like stuck with players you don't really want, but are still good enough where just give that up, get later round picks to nail and get 2 top 5 quarterbacks and just fucking cruise, or 2 top 8 quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm. And like, if both of these guys play at their ceiling, you're a playoff team. Yeah, period.
It's 50 points a week, right? At minimum.
Right. And so we actually traded 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. And so we got back a couple of later picks, but with our 5, 12, and 6, 1, and 6, 7, we managed to turn that into Terry McLaurin, Marquise Brown, and Treylon Burks. So they're young, right? Usually by round 7 where we're at now, teams are like, all right, I'm going to be a slow burn team, or okay, I'm going to be a win now team. The beauty of what we're doing is I think we could still go either way.
Right.
It just, honestly, I think the way that's going to change is what we take for running back, right? So like if we get like a value of like Dalvin Cook in the 9th, then it's like, all right, we're kind of pushing, right?
Right. We're actually up in 2 picks, and we'll have a back to back. I think our main targets right now, we're looking at Christian Kirk, and I think if Zach Charbonnet's there, I like it. I also think we've got Michael Mayer on there, since this is a tight end premium, 1.75 points per reception.
Pretty significant.
Yeah. Yeah. So all of the good tight ends flew off the board, but if all 3 of us agree that Michael Mayer's tight end 1 of this class, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially at cost. You know what I mean? Like Kincaid was taken over like Calvin Ridley, Chris Godwin, and Brandon Ayuk, which I think like, sure. But like we've talked about, he's going to win you the week and then he's going to cost you the week. Like
right.
In tight end premium, I'd rather have the dude who's getting 8 targets a game.
Especially if you look at the way the tight end from Dawson Knox in Buffalo was used last year, his production took a giant downturn from the year before. So it's like Allen's not really relying on that tight end position anymore.
It's a touchdown dependent spot.
Yeah.
There's not as much consistent use. And so I'm going to go ahead and put this to you guys. If we have these 3 players available our two picks, which one are you fine with not getting between Christian Kirk, Zach Charbonnet, or Michael Mayer?
I'll go first. I'll say Sharbs.
Yeah.
I do think we need a running back, but I think for me, like Ryan said in his ranking system, we don't know what that utilization is going to be, especially with that offensive scheme where I think he's going to be very red zone dependent. And if they don't hit that red zone dependency, I think we could significantly punt that position really hard right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Cause it's still the seventh and eighth round picks in a startup. And we're still looking for weekly players with long-term upside. And I think Kirk is a great, Ryan's planted his flag on Christian Kirk, and I see it, man. It's a floor play, right? It's a great floor play. Yeah. And actually, we are, like I said,
we're right receiver.
At round 7, pick 9, Calvin Ridley already went. So,
and I think that's an overestimation of what Ridley can do. Sure, he might come on, but he hasn't played football in 2 years. Like, it's going to take him
and
8 weeks.
Don't even know if he's going to play.
Right. And we haven't seen him play in so long that it's an interest. There's been some interesting picks that really left me scratching my head. There's been some interest, like Kenny Pickett and Will Levis going in round 7 of a startup draft that's a take.
Yeah, right. I mean, the guy did pick Sam Howell before he picked Kenny Pickett by accident. I was like, that's like kind of like the same dude, right?
Right,
You're just transitioning from a worse offense to a kind of little bit better offense.
And the guy we were just talking about, Damian Pierce in round 6, is a fucking choice.
Right.
That's a fucking choice. Like, I don't even think, I think if you asked Damian Pierce, he would say, I'll be out of the league in 5 years.
Who they took over Derrick Henry.
Yeah. One pick before Derrick Henry. So I'm actually seeing, since we went quarterback heavy, and this is a strategy thing that I'm going to back 100%. If you go quarterback heavy early on and you trade up to get that second quarterback, the value hits when everyone starts pushing for those QB2s.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, we've seen some spots where I'm like, oh, Jordan Love just went at the end of round 6. Geno Smith, Kenny Pickett, Kirk Cousins, Goff, Lance, and Levis. And I'm still looking at players on the board like Jameson Williams, Joe Mixon, Russell Wilson, DeAndre Hopkins. Like, there's still win now and some longer-term pieces there too. But people are like, I need to scramble for that second quarterback. And we can just be like, yeah, we already took care of that. We're good.
Yeah. And that's why I think trading up and giving away assets in the short term is a lot better, because like, what's the difference between Tyreek Hill and like Marquise Brown week to week? You know what I mean? Like, sure, Tyreek is going to win you weeks, but like, the range of outcomes is a lot smaller compared to the range of outcomes of quarterback finishes. And I think for that,
correct,
in a format like that, you need to really nail the guys who have the consistency of putting up the most amount of points per game.
I agree. And I think we're in a good spot. I'm really happy with how our draft has turned out so far. So why don't you guys each tell me, why don't you tell me a little bit about some of your rookie drafts that you've done so far? Shane said that he's you're on the clock right now, actually, aren't you?
I am. I'm holding up the clock because they wasted my day so I can record my podcast. They can hold my nuts while I do it.
All right, what do you got?
So I'm in two drafts right now. So they both kicked off yesterday. The first one, I had an atrocious team. I traded back from 102 back from 101 to 102, like I talked about last time. So with 102, I took Anthony Richardson, obvious.
There we go.
Surprise, Gibbs went 103. So that led a free fall, but I had 106. So that really didn't change much. It was kind of just going to be between who fell, Stroud, Gibbs, or JSN. I took JSN. I did have to navigate the dual Seattle quarterback situation. So I made sure I traded away DK Metcalf before I took JSN. Oh. So I traded away DK Metcalf in the 107, which the guy took Will Levis, which was a big old LOL to me. He even said it in chat. He's like, hey, y'all are going to roast me for this. But so I traded away DK Metcalf, the 107, which became Will Levis, for Devonta Smith, who, depending on who you talk about, they can be back-to-back. They could be a big gap. They could be it depends on who it is. But I think Devonta Smith has a much better trajectory going forward. And I know you said sell DK Metcalf.
I have Devonta Smith over DK Metcalf straight up in in Dynasty rookie or Dynasty receiver ranks?
I think in Bulletproof, DK Metcalf's like 407 and Devonta Smith's like 402. So on top of Devonta Smith, I got 111, which I took Quentin Johnston with because he fell. Jordan Addison went 108. Kincaid went 109 from someone who traded up for straight up Michael Pittman. And I think that's a terrible trade. Not tight end premium. Zay Flowers ripped at 110. I took Quentin Johnston at 111 because I couldn't really trade out of the pick. Charbs went 112 to the guy who won last year. I think that's a facade because his quarterback room is terrible and he's like very glass cannon win now. So okay. I am on the clock with 201 and 202. We can talk about those picks. I can transition to the next league of what I've done so far.
Who are you who do you want to take here at 201 and 202?
I'm between four guys. I'm between, based on my team structure, even though I do like Achane and Kendre Miller for a value play, I think for team structure, they don't really do anything for me. And I don't want to be holding the bag of, say, Achane, they take Dalvin Cook in July, and then my 201 becomes fucking 304. You know what I mean?
Sure.
There's an immediate value of loss there. So I'm between Michael Mayer, Jonathan Mingo, Marvin Mims, and Jaden Reed. So the latter two, I think I can catch later because I have 206 and I can probably trade up into a later pick. But I might let Mayer fall a little bit because I know this is not a tight end premium league. And I'll have multiple opportunities to pick like a Strange, a Musgrave, a Shoemaker in the third because I have four picks. So I'm kind of going, I think Mingo and Reed are my guys because I feel like they have the most relevancy to become the number one in that offense. And I think on a rebuilding team where I'm lacking in depth, I think those swings are something I'm willing to risk losing out on someone like Michael Mayer for.
Sure.
So I've been... Go ahead.
No, please.
I've been offered stuff. Like I was offered 203 and 20... Oh no, he originally said 208 and 209. And I said 203 and 207 for Quentin Johnston, but I didn't feel like that was enough.
No.
And I do have people knocking on my door a lot because they're starting to realize that I've manipulated the board in a way where I'm going to fuck all of them. So I have a lot of people asking me for certain players of like, hey, are you open to trading this player, that player? Because they're realizing their depth. And now this is where I can kind of exploit that, which I think rules.
There you go. I'll give you one of mine. I have a team that is absolute dog shit. It's a failed rebuild in year two of a rebuild. In a league where half the teams don't want to trade. So
misery.
It's pure misery. I offered Kevin, the guy that makes beer sheets, Stafford for like 208 or 209. And he was like, I fail to see what that does for my team. And I'm like, dude, your starting quarterback is Sam Darnold and you have a win now team. Just trying to help. So
it's 208 this year. Nothing.
Nothing. So I had 108 and I took Will Levis because I just have nothing at quarterback. But now I have some perspective. I have at least the ship is right. So I've got Brock Purdy, Jordan Love, and now Will Levis. So at least I have three starting quarterbacks.
It's nice to have hope again. You know what I mean?
It is. It is. And then the next pick I had was 206 and Jaden Reed fell to 206. And I don't even think I hesitated. You're up to pick Jaden Reed. Boom. Lock it in. The only other pick I had was 401, so I actually moved some 2024 lates for 312 and 412 because I just wanted some extra dart throws. 312, I took Evan Hull. 401, I took Tyler Scott. And at 412, I took Xavier Hutchinson from Houston. He's a big body guy. It's Houston. It's the wide open for the last pick in your draft. That's totally fine by me.
I thought about taking like a last round pick on him too, because he's a big guy. He's gonna emerge as a decent receiver no matter where he goes. And
hope so. Nico Collins.
Right the fuck. So Ryan, tell us about the $69 fab draft that you've had all the picks in. Give us your follow up.
We talked a lot about this draft and strategies for me, and so I at 104 I ended up taking Stroud. Because I need some developmental quarterbacks. I actually ended up with Hendon Hooker too in the third round.
In the third round, I'm totally cool with that. In the third,
that's a good value.
Yeah, yeah. No, I didn't take him in the first round. So 104 was CJ Stroud. Then at 106, I got JSN.
Love
then
it.
Then I picked up Big Man Quentin Johnson, because I just like, yeah, Herbert's going to be there for a while, and eventually Mike Williams is going to get traded or retire or something, and it's just going to take that place right over. Keenan Allen's, this maybe his last year, you know, he's going to be good in a couple of years, I think. Then I grabbed...
That's the highest ceiling out of all these guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Agreed.
And then I grabbed Zach Charbonnet. Keep him on the back burner. And then with my last pick of the first round, I got Michael Mayer.
I love it. Two tight ends.
Yeah.
Set and forget. Just leave it alone.
I think I only had one second round pick, and I took A-Chain at like 207 or 208, something
like
that.
That's a good spot for him. I would take him. Yeah. I'm not the biggest A-Chain guy, but 207, 208 for a potential guy who could be everything or nothing is a very fair location.
Yep, right. Absolutely.
And I have plenty of room to take risks in this league. I just have to figure out who the three players I'm going to put on my taxi squad are.
I mean, Hooker for sure, right?
Yeah, most likely.
I got a controversial take.
Go ahead.
I think Derek or Jared Goff gets a contract.
Really?
I don't think they're done with him.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, who knows? Hooker for a third round pick, I don't mind it. Stash him in your taxi, see what happens for a year.
He's not a loss. I'm not saying don't draft Hooker, but I'm just saying I think Goff might be sticking around longer than we think.
Who'd you draft in the fourth, Ryan?
Actually, I haven't drafted anyone in the fourth yet. I actually have an offer to trade that fourth round pick for a 2025 fourth round pick. That's all I have right now. I might just do it because the last player I'm thinking about putting on my taxi squad now with Rodgers there. Now, look, I know they have Conklin. I know they have Rucker. I know they have CJ Uzama. All right.
It doesn't fucking matter.
But look who is the biggest man in the draft this year. Mr. Kuntz. 6'8", 255 pounds. Jesus. He's gonna be someone one day, and I'm gonna put him on the taxi squad. But I think I'm just gonna trade away the fourth pick, and I can get Kuntz later on free agency. No one's gonna pick him up. I think so.
You're probably right. Okay, so by the time we talk next week, hopefully we'll have picked at least one of two players. Even though, you know, we're willing to trade back. If anyone listening wants to trade up into this spot, let us know. And we'll talk
for sale.
Yep, you can. I make an offer. Just make an offer. We'll return next week with our 82s and some more dynasty stuff, and we'll figure out off air when we want to start doing our team recaps.
Sure.
So any final thoughts from us who all just probably watched the Chargers schedule reveal, and that's probably the highlight of the Chargers season?
Yep. We're great with memes. We're terrible with winning.
What's their toughness of schedule? Is it like number one?
We could talk about that next week.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll talk some shit. Until next week, you guys, I hope you have a great week. Thanks for donating if you donated. And that's pretty much it.
If you still want in, people love it. So
hit us up. Yeah.
Pre-ordering over. Not pre-ordering, but ordering's not over. The window's not closed.
Always available. All right, everyone. Good night.
Peace. Good night.
Smart, dude.